Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the War Report. And for those of you, if this is your first time, we welcome you as well. Today, we have another full panel of guests, and I'm going to get right to them. But our issue, if you have not gone to our group page or to War Report page on BBS, is community schools. And I will have a little bit more to say about that after I introduce our guests. We have four guests, and two of our guests are people who have been on the show many times. They're regulars, and then we have two new guests. So I'm going to ask them to give us the little elevator introduction to themselves, starting with Dr. Mark Mason.
Hi, great to be back on the War Report. I'm a professor of African American Studies and History at Fordham University and have watched Bronx schools be devastated by corporate reform in its many guises, and am looking to find ways to organize communities to take control back of our schools.
Dr. Nancy Bailey.
Hi, I'm Nancy Bailey, and I was a special ed teacher for many years, and primarily in the state of Florida. I was educated starting in Michigan, though, so I know a little bit about the school system there as well. And now I'm over in Tennessee and Memphis, and kind of ground zero for a lot of the reforms that are taking place. I now have a blog and spend a lot of time writing about education issues.
Okay. Dr. Ruth Powers, please.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Ruth Powers. I'm a professor at the College of Staten Island, which is part of the City University of New York, and I'm in the School of Education there, and I prepare educational leaders. And my interest is in preparing leaders who have the kind of mindset and skills to begin to create really community-based schools.
Okay, Mr. Jamal Bowman.
Yes, hello everyone. This is Jamal Bowman, founding principal of Cornerstone Academy for Social Action Middle School in the Bronx. I've been in education for 15 years, going into my seventh year as a principal, and I just feel it's time to change the world. I feel it's time to come together collaboratively, look at what's going wrong, and figure out how to do it right together. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Community schools. It's a concept, it's a practice that has been around for, in the formal stage, maybe since the mid-1960s. Over the year, it has been transformed to be different things to different people. Past, maybe not quite 2 weeks ago, there were a lot of chatter from different people about what community schools are. What is a community school? Several prominent people were exchanging ideas about what community school was. I became part of that conversation. I have a background in community schools. I was a director of a community school site in Detroit while I was a graduate student at Wayne State working on my doctorate. I joined that conversation, and from that conversation, I decided that if we, the professionals, were having a discussion about what community schools are, what the purpose, and et cetera, you can imagine what the public may know or not know about community schools. Hence, decided to have this show and have the people on that are here to help talk about it. And again, if you visit the blog page, I'm sorry, the Facebook page on the War Report, you'll know some of the issues that we're going to try and get to. And one of the issues is, right off the bat, is what is a community school? Nancy, you and Mark maybe have a different notion. Jamal, you may have a different notion. Ruth, you do. I'll say you do. You may have a different notion. So let's start with that. What, in your view, is a community school? You want to start, Mark?
Okay. I go back to the 1960s when the vision was to try to bring some of the insurgency of the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement and the women's liberation movement and into education by taking empowered community leaders and activists into and giving them an opportunity to create new public schools that would be centers where people could come together not only to figure out better ways to educate young people, but also as spaces where communities, everybody in a community can debate the issues of the day. So the idea was to create public schools which were true democratic spaces, both in their pedagogy and in their role in the larger community, which also meant that those schools be open long after classroom hours and open to, you know, to people in the communities who wanted a place to meet, to talk, to learn. So that was my vision of it then, and it's my vision of it now.
Okay, let me move on to Nancy.
Well, I agree pretty much with what Mark said. I guess my concern today, however, is public-private partnerships. In a perfect world, I think it would be really helpful if the private sector helped public schools. But as we know, even from the introduction of this program, that's not the case. I think there's a real effort underway to dismantle our public schools across the country. And so while I agree with everything Mark says, I'm a little bit confused, and I think other people are too, and a little worried about, some of the interrelationships with community schools by the private sector. And one example of this, for example, is the Wallace Foundation, who support the Beacon Community Schools, which are apparently very good schools, are highlighted on the community school website. But the Wallace Foundation also supports KIPP schools. And we know KIPP schools, KIPP to me, is really a group that's out to pretty much get rid of the public school system in this country, even through teacher education now with their Relay. They were co-creators of the Relay Graduate School, which is kind of pervasive now when it comes to teacher education, and not in a good way. And so I just have some concerns about what this means to the concept of community schools. And the other day I mentioned the YMCA. Arne Duncan touts the YMCA as being a really great thing for community schools. And I like the Y. I'm a member of the Y. And I exercise there a couple times a week. And if the Y wants to help with after-school activities with schools, I would be okay with that. But the YMCA also have a charter school in Detroit, and I'm not okay with that.
Let me bring Ruth in.
Okay.
Hi. I totally understand what Nancy's saying and agree with it. And for me, the key thing is what Mark said about bringing in the insurgency of the 60s and taking empowered community leaders to create new schools, because I see the marketing opportunities that something like community schools can present, and that can create all the problems. But I believe that if we start with the idea that the people within the community are the experts in what they need and what their lives should look like, that we have some ability to resist the private takeover and work really within the community-based organizations and centers to create something that meets the needs of the community within the community's control as opposed to outside private control.
Okay. Jamal.
Yes, I agree with everything that's already been said, and I really understand and empathize with Nancy's points. I think for me, community schools is about putting the parent voice at the center of education, again, working collaboratively with teachers and administration and students within the community. I think every community has specific needs that are unique to that community, and it's about having a conversation around what those needs are and then designing our curriculum instruction and assessments, quote-unquote, formatively to meet those needs. I see a great opportunity with healthcare professionals, schools, and other community-based organizations working together to meet the needs of the community. So it's not just about what the federal government says or the state says or even what the principals and teachers say in isolation. It's about everyone serving a community, working together, and discussing what the needs are and then working to make those things happen.
Okay. Everyone is attempting to agree with each other, so I'm going to say I disagree with all of you. Okay? All of y'all have it wrong. Okay. So let me try and break up this kumbaya thing that we have going. Okay. The title of this show was, Community Schools, Empowering Idea for Low and Moderate Income Communities, or a Trojan Horse for Corporate School Reform. That's the question of what are community schools? As I mentioned earlier, I have a background in community schools. Mark, you mentioned the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Just so happened, that's when my involvement in community schools took place. Late 1960s, I'm a graduate student at Wayne State University working on my doctorate. Many of the people who listen to me regularly know some of this. Detroit had gone through the riots in 1965, then the riots after King's assassination in 68. Detroit was a tinderbox, and the community was demanding all kinds of things. And one of the things that the community was demanding was that the university, Wayne State University, which is downtown Detroit, share some of its many resources with its neighboring communities. Now, at the same time, of course, we have the ESEA bill coming out, which supports the idea of community schools. So hence, Wayne begrudgingly does a community school program. And it was called Wayne State University Community Extension Program. The university purchased or leased a building from the Catholic Archdiocese that was smack dab in one of the closest neighborhoods to the university, beautiful building, and they set up a program. I was asked to come and teach the first college-level class there in the community. We had a program where the community folks took three college-level classes, passed them with a C or better, they would be admitted provisionally on campus as a regular student and not have to take the SAT exam. And then if they did well, then they would move from provisional to regular student. Okay, I taught that one of the first classes there. I was then asked to come on board. They created two positions for me. One was the associate director of the community extension program because we were going to have many sites. And then director of that center that the first program was developed. We did some of everything that each of you have mentioned. One, I expanded the college curriculum classes, GED courses, meeting rooms for the community, provided staff to help them become community organizations, after-school programs for everyone K through 12, basketball leagues, you name it, we tried to provide it in terms of extending the university's resources to the community in a positive way. that was our notion, which pretty much was close to the notion that came out of the ESEA in 1966-65 sort of thing. Unlike some of your comments, I observe over the years that the community school concept has been tortured and recontoured and et cetera. And give you an example. Talked to a person recently, a parent, very pro public schools, and she said, well, aren't all public schools community schools? I got that comment quite a bit, hence that's why I had the question, you know, what are community schools? And the question on my intro here in terms of community schools, are they a good thing for the low-income, moderate-income communities, or as Nancy sort of alluded to, are they becoming Trojan horses for the corporate school reform? And I hear everyone, but I don't hear a definitive response to that particular question. I'm going to go back again. The question, community school, is it good for low income, moderate communities? Or as Nancy said, do we have a problem that it's being used as a propaganda to further the objectives of the corporate state agenda?
Well, when I hear that question, my immediate thought goes to the World Bank. And, you know, we're going to go and help people, but of course the way we're going to do that is we're going to tell them what they need, and then we're going to find people with whom there will be private contracts to supply the services that we've decided that these people need. And I think that the danger is there. And in this whole notion, and you're talking about Wayne sharing its resources, this whole problem with people seeing education as a public good, that what happens in the middle of New York City is just as important for the people who live on the North Shore of Long Island as it is for the people who are living in the middle of New York City. So that when you're talking about sharing resources, when you don't have a mindset where people want to share public resources, that opens the door for the private funders.
I think that the vision we had many times, people putting forward visions that were coming from the ground up of what communities needed. There was in the late 1980s this whole movement towards culturally relevant pedagogy and Afrocentrism and multiculturalism that we needed to have. If we're going to reach kids, we have to have a curriculum rooted in their lives. And it was smacked down. You know, the vision that you were describing in Detroit, that doesn't exist anywhere now. It was smacked down. The movement towards Afrocentric and multicultural and culturally appropriate schools was smacked down. And in return, we get this top-down model of a common core curriculum rooted in national testing, and then everything that is community-based is superimposed on that. We have to throw out all those concepts on which the private partnerships are now superimposing. Because if you don't challenge the testing, if you don't challenge the curriculum, then your community school is not a democratic space. And what Jamal was saying and Ruth was saying is we want to go back to the 60s, go back to the late 80s, and ask people what they want from a school and make that the model, not what is coming from Congress or the state. And if you do that, you have an integrity that exposes all the other ways of manipulating the concept.
What
you have to start,
Mark,
from a place of integrity and democracy.
What you're saying, Mark, is one of the questions here in terms of the history of community schooling. And not just going back to the original bill, ESEA. That bill It was part of the anti-poverty program, the War on Poverty program, and it envisioned, in part, our schools as being a critical resource in trying to deal with poverty.
Yes.
The language was, I don't think, and I may be wrong, I wish Vicki was here. She's our resident expert here on War Report, Dr. Vicki Young. I don't think anywhere in the bill the language of achievement gap existed. What they talked about was opportunity gap, and that the schools, properly funded, community knowing what they need, and et cetera, was a great place to try and strike a blow against poverty at that level, the community level, by empowering the school to help empower the community people to attack the achievement, not the achievement gap, but the equity gap. So that's the history.
There was also a period of... There was also a time in the 80s where we were trying to integrate our schools as well. I mean, we were doing a lot of rezoning. There were a lot of counts of the kinds of kids, the kind of diversity that we would have in our schools. And that was pretty well cast aside by parents involved in community schools versus Seattle schools. The Supreme Court came in and said, you don't need to have counts anymore. And so even though I like a lot of what community schools and what they stand for, what they work on, I'm not exactly sure how they bring people together from, multicultural. And that, again, ties together with some of the private partnerships and some of the things going on. And I think it's just sometimes a very murky, there's not a really clear definition of what a community is. School is, because maybe it's many different things. Could that be?
Well,
yeah,
going back to what Mark was saying about the notion that the notion of the community school that is truly operated and controlled by its community has to be connected to the other things that are happening within the school and the way we're thinking about education and this whole notion of achievement and outcomes and what kind of life we're trying to prepare students for with college and career readiness, that if that is your goal, then you end up with a KIPP school because they're measuring themselves against somebody's idea of what college career ready means. And if what we're talking about is something substantially different from that, then that can move into the community school. But I think that the community school depends on a different way of thinking about what we want for our kids and for everybody's kids.
Jamal?
So answer to your question, I think, is yes. I think the term community schools has been co-opted by the privatizers. I think like many other things, they use their resources to control a narrative, whether it's through media or through campaigns or through what have you. They are very strategic and very organized and very relentless in, what they try to put forth and what they try to manipulate. I think we, on our end, we need to be just as organized and just as relentless, because despite their financial resources and their impact on elections, for example, we still have 70 to 75% of people not engaged in local politics, not even voting in local politics. So the more we can mobilize the people and inform the people, meaning the parents, meaning other educators, and connect with other schools and other people who service communities, the more we can begin to have real conversations about what our needs are, the more we defeat the privatizers. Because despite their resources, they still win, whether it's an election or even charter schools. I mean, in New York, only like 5% of New York schools are charter schools. So they're not anywhere near, the majority. But they have been controlling the narrative, and they have been very successful at that. And, you know, parents think charter means good. They think high test scores mean good. And as it was mentioned earlier, we have to take back the narrative and expand the narrative, in my opinion. What does college and career readiness really mean? Is that the only thing we want? And let's talk about those things as well.
So, and Herod, and that question that I asked and all of your responses goes back to the very first show here on the War Report, where I spent that first hour saying that at the end of the day, it always comes down to what is the purpose of education? Who defines, who creates that purpose, the vision, the mission of the purpose? He or she who controls the purpose controls public education. And I hear that. But also, in the set of questions that we're going to deal with, that leads right into what we've been talking about, is something that Dancy had said in terms of KIPP being they call themselves a public school, but we know that they're charter schools, that they're not public schools. Yes, I said it, folks. They're not public schools. What community schools do, and it's an unintended consequence, but there should be a consequence that everybody should recognize right off the bat is that it aids what I think Nancy said, it aids segregation. And one of the things about that original ESEA bill was they were trying to deal a blow to segregation that came out of the Plessy versus Ferguson back in 1800, because the data from James Coleman, in his massive education research project showed that segregation was one of the worst things that could happen in terms of minorities getting a shot at quality education, and that, as Kenneth and Mamie Clark had shown from New York City, that segregation impacts racial identity, racial values, and et cetera, and I could go on and on and on. So when that question on for the show in terms of who benefits, who gains, why would...
Let
me finish the question.
Let me point something out about...
Mark, let me finish the question. The question is, why corporate America are so now in favor of community schools all across the country?
Because they have an opportunity to profit from this in all kinds of ways. One of the things about a KIPP school that's different from the vision of community schools is the only people who can meet at a KIPP school are KIPP parents. And as a result of this, what you end up is dividing communities against themselves, so they're much more vulnerable to real estate investment and gentrification, as well as profiteering based on test-based curriculum. So everywhere you have seen charter schools, you have seen major profits in real estate investment and gentrification and demographic inversion, pushing of people out of cities into suburbs. A real community school, it would be a site of resistance to gentrification. So it's in the interest of the real estate investors and the hedge fund people and the test companies to take this concept of community education and take a portion of it, but prevent it from being truly democratic and truly unifying, so they can split up these communities in ways that that disempowers them as a force to challenge poverty and inequality, and also to divide them to make them make way for gentrification. I think that the only way we can resist gentrification and disorganization of communities is to put forth a democratic concept of what a community school is as a place where everybody meets to figure out not only their curriculum and what their children should get, but what the community needs to unite and fight back.
A social justice model for community schools.
Yes, a social, a democratic social justice model for community education.
Wherein you are concerned not just with pedagogy, curriculum, working conditions, schooling conditions, but you're concerned with the broader issues that affect the community, the broader issues that affect the city, the state, the nation, and this whole notion of social justice being a euphemism for civil rights, human rights, moral rights, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few minutes that we have to move on to another issue here. But I want to quickly, Nancy, what's your response to the question that I threw out in terms of who benefits from community schools?
Well, I think that, of course, you know, to me, a good public school, like what you were saying before, people will say to you, isn't my public school a community school? I think people have always thought of their public schools in that light. A good public school should be a community school. We should have them even open later in the day and all of that. But I wanted to bring something up because Sheila Ressinger, who's just a dynamic activist in Rhode Island, mentioned this to me, and I really didn't know a lot about this, but I've been trying to read about it today. There are a lot of parents who are very concerned about wraparound services, and wraparound services, their concern stems from the overall concerns parents have had with the Privacy Act and whether kids' information and data mining would somehow be jeopardized within a community school setting. And I think here again, and when I was just now listening to Mark and also listening to Ruth and Jamal, I'm thinking this is, again, how the corporations might be co-opting this because parents are very fearful of their children's data. And so that tends to somehow get tied in with wraparound services. Could anyone address that? Are there fears? Do you understand the fears going on about that or know more about that than I do? I know it's an
issue. I can speak a little bit about it. I'm going into my seventh year as a principal. I guess nowadays that's a really long time. Many principals, for whatever reason, stay about 2-3 years in the community and then they're done. I think for me it's about trust and it's about relationships. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about building or working in partnership with healthcare professionals in our local community to do just what you mentioned, to come up with a wraparound strategic plan to support our families with the highest needs. So, yes, there definitely is fear, and New York State tried to create, like, a huge database. I forget what the program was called, but New York State tried to create a large database of, like, student data that parents didn't really understand what was going to happen with it. Thankfully, that was shut down. But in terms of what's happening with parents outside and with families outside of the school setting and working to meet those needs, the relationships I've been able to build over the last few years, and now working with healthcare professionals, the parents trust us a lot more and are able to share a lot more. So I know the state was trying to do something with student data that got shut down, thankfully, but it's a real concern. But obviously, the relationships and the trust is key.
Ruth?
Yes. We've got two community schools here on Staten Island. One that is just working on getting on board, and the other one is an elementary school that has moved pretty far forward in developing a community school sort of a support system. And they have not found that the parents are reluctant to take advantage of the services because of concerns about data mining. I don't know if that is because it's a concern that hasn't been brought to their attention or, again, what Jamal was saying, that there's a trusting kind of relationship among the people who are running that school and working with the community that prevents them from being so concerned about that. I'm not sure what the reason is, but they have not had a problem with parents being reluctant to take advantage of the services.
Okay. I'm being flooded with questions from other people here on Facebook and Instagram and all these other things. And one of them is saying that, yeah, I've been listening to this for half an hour, and I still don't know what a community school is. What is the difference between a community school and a charter school? And who owns the community schools? Give an example of an actual school that one could look up. Is this just a concept? Let's deal with that, because that's going to take us to about the end of our time.
Well, there are many places that are actually having, or at least moving toward, community schools and trying to maintain them in the kind of public focus that we've been talking about. But there are some in Cincinnati. There are some in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that you can look up. The difference between a community school and a charter school is that the charter school is using your tax money and being privately controlled by outsiders, and the community school is using public money to serve the community under its own control and empowerment. I really think that that's an important fundamental difference, where we're allowing people in the community schools movement, we're telling people, you know the most about what you need, and you know the most about where in your community you might be able to get it, not us coming in from the outside and saying, gee, we think this is what you need and we can help you get it. We think that what you need is high test scores. So we're going to find companies who can help you, help your children get the high test scores. That's not what the parents are really concerned about when you talk to them.
Ruth, let me come in, because let's say we only have a few minutes here. Let me try and answer this question for the person who and the other people involved with this issue. It's a concept. It was a concept back in 1965, 66. And it was a concept that was put in practice across the country. It was a concept that your neighborhood school, the one that opened at 8, closed at 3, would now maybe open at 7 and close at 9 p.m. or 10 o'clock. That's what my school, what our program did. And that it would be a public school, which is owned by the public, but it would be open to not just the kids and the teachers. It would be open to the community for the purposes that I outlined earlier. That was what the purpose was. The earlier community schools, I think, practiced that concept. It has just been in since the rise of the corporate takeover of public education that we see the privatizers coming in and changing the community school concept. And one last statement, just this other day, I was reading about something that reminded me of something that I said in my first couple of shows here, that back in the 1990s, when there were two movements, the standards movement, where they were trying to bring in universal standards, and then there was another movement that was trying to destroy public education. They were miserable in their efforts. They were defeated. They went back. They studied the civil rights movement, and they co-opted the language of the civil rights movement, came back to what we call 2.0, and these two movements pretty much became very successful and emerged into one. And the whole idea of those two movements was to eventually destroy public education and erect a privatized system that you've heard me talk about for a year and a half. Community schools now, as Jamal mentioned, the concept has been co-opted. People are now calling these, our public schools, community schools, so that who's going to be against a community school? So that if they position themselves and push themselves as community schools, with all of the original ideas and purposes of that concept on the surface, but underneath, striving to meet the goals of the privatization movement, that is to turn schools into profit centers, then yes, there is a confusion as to what community schools is. And that confusion comes from what is going on now to take over public education and to privatize it versus the original concept of the community schools being a resource to, again, attack poverty, attack inequality, and bring those, the state and the federal government would put resources into our community schools for the purpose of enable them to enable the community to do its job.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yes, we got a couple of minutes. You can jump in, but only for a few
seconds. Yeah, so first of all, I just posted a link to CASA Middle School, our website, onto the War Report on Public Education Facebook page, so you can go to that site and look up an example of a type of community school. Let me just say, in my experience, and I hate to speak for all charters because I haven't been to all charters, charter schools are the furthest thing from community schools anyone can think of. They have private investments. They have private investments from Wall Street. Those Wall Street investors get kickbacks through tax breaks to over the years of a charter school's existence. That's one. Two, there's a series of charter schools that I call an evil empire. KIPP, Achievement First, Success Academy, I'm forgetting the other two right now, but KIPP, Achievement First, Success Academy, Democracy Prep,
Uncommon Schools,
they use draconian methods in their behavior management that takes the humanity away from the students that they serve. They are drill and kill test prep factories, and they are drill and kill teacher factories. They have huge teacher turnover rates. Teach for America teachers are in and out of there in 2-3 years max. They are inhumane institutions. You can't even call them of learning. Inhumane institutions. So they are the furthest thing away from community schools based on my experience. It's not holistic. It's not about teaching from the heart. And the racial demographic of those in charge versus who they serve are not representative of the community, if you know what I'm saying. The teaching staff and the management staff, they're all white. The kids are all black and brown, and they treat them like slaves. Kids cannot even speak during lunch. They can't even speak during breakfast. These are draconian institutions. I really want the listeners to understand this.
Very well put.
Wow.
School.
That was well put, and I'd like to add that Dr. Mark Nason did a really nice blog post on my website about the difference between charter schools and community schools. So if anybody out there in Facebook world wants to take a look at it, that might clear up their questions.
Ruth?
No, I was just I really support what Jamal was talking about the fact that the approach, an inhumane approach to children, has nothing to do with what we're talking about in community schools. Community schools are places of welcome and love and support. They are not places of punishment and inhumane behavior towards children or their families.
Okay. Let me try and summarize again, because hopefully we'll go to our parent who is running for office there, public school board seat in Connecticut. I haven't heard whether or not she's online yet with us, but I'm assuming that she will be. Let me finish again. Oh, I just got a message from one of the people who were confused saying thank you very much for your answers and that things are much clearer for her and, I guess, the rest of the public. So when we got off the kumbaya thing, we really got to the issue and stated it quite clearly for everyone. In this arena that we're in, my views, again, I was there when the whole notion of community schools came about, and I was one of the first practitioners. Mark has always teased me that I was one of the early practitioners in African American studies at urban universities. Yes, I was, and part of that was the community school experience. We have to be very, very careful. Jamal, you said it, you hit the nail on the head here, and I've said it a million times. The corporate state power elite, they are not dumb people. They're greedy assholes, in my opinion. They're evil. They're immoral. They're trumping our human and our civil rights, but they're not stupid. They are very smart. They use their money to bring smart people with them, and they have crafted a vision, a campaign, an agenda, and they knew from day one all of the intricate components of the public school system that had to be destroyed bit by bit, not swiftly, but over a period of time. And they also knew what failure was from the past. They crafted an agenda that I call the Machiavellian agenda that I have to marvel at it, and I can't stand them. But I have to give them credit for they took the language of the civil rights movement. They use such thing as choice. Everyone wants a choice. Everyone wants to feel that they are in control. They're in the driver's seat. They took community schools. Everyone wants to think that their school is a community school in concept, while not in practice. They've done almost every single thing right that's wrong for us, but right in terms of their overall agenda. And
but you know,
we
James,
can see
James,
it.
Excuse me for interrupting, but you know what they don't know and what they're not smart about is they don't know anything about children. And sooner or later, that's what's going to bring them down, I think.
I knew you were going to say that, Nancy. I made a bet.
About a lot of things, but I think sooner or later they will have a problem with. And parents already are starting to see what's happening. I don't think they're really their problem to me lies with not understanding what makes good education and what makes they're not kind to kids. And okay. I think sooner or later that's going to catch up with them.
Okay, let me stop you. I just got a message from our person who's waiting to come on. She hasn't gotten a call from us yet, and she is waiting. And hopefully, BBS, you will hear me, and we'll put that call into her so we can bring her on. So
thank you, everyone.
Thank you for this amazing opportunity.
Jamal?
Yeah, are we done already? That's it?
I know, time flies.
To be continued Wednesday at my house in Brooklyn. We have a big meeting about this.
Well,
yeah, thanks everybody for sharing your ideas. I've been taking a lot of notes because a lot of what you said has expanded my thinking about this, and I appreciate it.
Folks, we can do a version of this as we go along. Today was not the end of all possible worlds on discussion about this. Aggie is on, and folks, you may stay around and listen to Aggie. Aggie, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
How are you? Okay. Aggie, I hope you've been listening to the show. You know, we've been talking about community schools. Aggie is running for an opportunity to run for school board there in, tell of the city that you're in, and take it over from here.
Hi, my name is Aggie, and I'm running for the school board in New Britain, Connecticut. Actually, the Democratic Town Committee already endorsed the incumbents, and my running mate, Violet Sims, and I feel that we are much better candidates to fill those seats, and therefore we are trying to force a Democratic primary in our town, and we want the people of New Britain or the Democrats of New Britain to decide who they feel the right candidates are to serve on the Board of Education.
And why are you running?
I'm running because I've been a parent advocate in education for several years now, probably the past 5 or 6 years. not only locally here in New Britain, but also at the state level and nationally, have gone to Washington, D.C. and have marched with the Journey for Justice to improve urban education. And I want to run as the parent voice on the school board, because I feel many times the school board implements policies that inadvertently impact parents, and they don't think about parents and what those policies mean. So I want to be that parent voice.
And let me also add, Connecticut is a blue state, quote, Democrat. Governor is just pretty much like Cuomo in New York. And for those of you who are involved in education and the war, you know when I say like Cuomo, he's an asshole. Now, and many of the school boards are either Republicans who are pushing the corporate agenda or have Democrats who are pushing the same corporate agenda. It's my understanding, Aggie, that you and your running mate are up against a Democratic party there that is not supporting your efforts to challenge the two Democrat incumbents, and said they are supporting the incumbents, and you have an uphill battle to just even get this to a point where you can challenge them. There's a process there. It's almost like a primary, but it's a pre-primary. Explain that.
Yes, you're correct. And actually, this is the first time I'm really kind of getting into the whole political aspect of activism and, you know, running for the school board. And actually, I've opened my eyes to really see what politics is about, because I believe it's probably the same not only here locally, but at the state level and at the national level. What I found was we didn't even get to talk about the issues. No one took a look at the incumbents and their track records. What did they vote for? What didn't they vote for? Were they present at meetings? A lot of times people run for the Board of Education just to get the title, and they don't necessarily do the hard work that's behind it. So the Democratic Town Committee is apparently okay with the status quo. They're not listening to parents. Parents in the community are frustrated. As I'm walking around getting signatures and talking to more and more parents, I hear lots and lots of horror stories of just total disrespect of parents and students, and things have to change. And I hope that I'm the voice and the what our parents are looking for.
Angie, our time is up, but just let me say, welcome to the War Report. That's exactly what we do here. We are a voice for trying to make people aware, understand, become emotionally engaged in the issue, and then take positive action to, one, save our public schools, and two, bring about quality across the board for all of our students in public education. And welcome to the war, and welcome to War Report. With that, everyone, I have got to say goodbye. This is not over until it's over. And so we will be coming back to this issues and more again. Thank you, everyone. Have a good Sunday, and see you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.